Welcome to Dr. Andy Radio, your solutionpreneurial resource, where we provide 60 minutes or less to success radio. And now, here's your host, Dr. Andy.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Dr. Andy Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Andy, and today we have a very interesting and diverse lineup. We will be starting off today's episode with author Van Wallach.
Hello, and I'm here.
And he's here. There you go.
Yep.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good, good. A little cold in Connecticut, but warm enough in my apartment.
Well, there you go. Well, see, it should be cold in Connecticut. You know, got the holidays just finishing up.
Right. Snow on the ground.
There you go. See, Christmas in Connecticut and all that good stuff. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. Well, my background is that I just published my first book, A Kosher Dating Odyssey, which is about, as the subtitle says, one former Texas Baptist quest for a naughty and nice Jewish girl. I grew up in South Texas, a town called Mission, which is on the border with Mexico. Princeton University was my ticket out of the borderlands. Went there as an economics major, pursued a career in journalism and then corporate communications. Was married, was divorced, got very involved in online dating. Had a lot of different experiences. It ultimately worked out, and I've been with dating a very wonderful woman for about 5 years now. And I decided to pull my experiences, both dating-wise and spirituality-wise, into this book. While both my parents are Jewish, I grew up a Christian until I was in high school, and then I got more in touch with my Jewish heritage, and I've been pursuing it for the last 40 years or so.
Okay, okay. So what exactly is a naughty and nice Jewish? What is that?
Sure, well, a naughty and nice Jewish girl is one that combines, first let's start on the nice side. She's educated, she's curious about the world, she is attractive, maybe not in your Miss America terms of attractiveness, but certainly in kind of your, I don't know, the nanny kind of attractiveness. The naughty, I've always been a big fan of Fan
Drescher. Okay.
Fan Drescher. I mean, she's like, except for the voice, she's kind of like the supreme being in my universe. Oh. The naughty side is somebody who's, kind of in touch with her physical and, shall we say, erotic side and kind of open to things and will do, go to like, Jewish burlesque, which indeed does exist in New York, and I've gone to it a couple of times, and isn't excessively uptight, will kind of share her emotions, not in a crazy way, but somebody who's got a little bit of a, spunk and, femininity to her. So it's really those are the yin and yang of naughty and nice.
Gotcha. Okay. So let's talk about, now you started out as an economics major, or you went there for economics and ended up in journalism?
Right. Well, I had always been a writer. I worked on my high school paper, my hometown paper. I had summer jobs at newspapers. So economics was really a way to get a background and a topic to write about. And in fact, I went into business journalism. So I didn't pursue any kind of graduate work in economics because I was doing what I really loved doing, which was writing.
Right, right. That's good. No, I understand that. Trust me. It's just funny to hear somebody go, yeah, I went there for economics and ended up a journalist. Okay.
Well, back around 1980, that's when business journalism was really starting to take off. And it seemed like a natural application. I mean, if I could do it again and go back to Princeton, I probably wouldn't major in economics. But, I've been able to spend the last 30 years studying the stuff I really wanted to study.
That's good. That's good. Okay, and so from there you ended up in one relationship which didn't work out, and then how did you get into online dating?
Well, what happened was that while I was, in my rogue bachelor days in the 1980s, it was all very traditional. There were ads in the back of New York Magazine and the Village Voice. You know, there were personal introductions. The internet didn't exist really. While I was married from 89 to 2001 was really the time where the internet developed. And by the time I was living on my own in 2002 and able to, you know, think about dating, the internet had come along, was well developed. There were dating sites out there. So it completely revolutionized the whole process of dating and looking for romance.
Okay. Okay. And so let's talk a little bit about your travels. Now,
sure.
You confessed that you ended up down in Brazil. Now, how did that happen?
Well, Brazil was something that grew out of something that often happens on the internet, where you're on a dating site, you see somebody whose profile you like, you connect, you start swapping information, and then what? You know, there's like a built-in frustration factor in the internet. While it's very easy to meet people, unfortunately, distance is the great killer of relationships there, because ultimately it's either not going to exist or you're going to close the gap or something. So I had met a woman from Brazil, and she had invited me to come down and see her, and I was kind of footloose at the time, and I said, sure, why not? I grew up, you know, 3 miles from Mexico, so I've always had sort of an affinity for Latin America. So I was open for adventure, and she invited me, and I decided to go on and do it. And I had my passport, and I let my friends and relatives know, and they thought I was crazy, but I went ahead and did it, and I'm glad I did.
That's good. Oh, that's good. So what led to you, now you said you grew up Baptist, and then you decided to embrace your Jewish roots.
Right.
How did that happen?
Well, that was a long and pretty tortured process.
I bet.
And I did it pretty much on my own. I grew up in a town where we were really the only Jewish family. And my parents had been divorced, and my mother left the religious upbringing really for my brother and me, up to our landlady, who was a very devout Southern Baptist. There was a temple in the next town over, McAllen, Texas, where my parents had been married, but mom didn't really want to have anything to do with them. So my brother and I went to First Baptist Church of Mission. I became, you know, involved in it and devout, and at the same time, I never really forgot that we were Jewish. My mother had menorah in the household, some Jewish books, etc. When I was like 14 years old, I went to visit my father, who had moved to New York eventually and was always Jewish, and he talked to me about it and showed me that there are other ways to believe and live as opposed, in addition to being a Southern Baptist, and it started working on me. I started thinking about it, and it felt more and more like the direction I wanted to move in. I felt dissatisfied with being a Christian, being a Southern Baptist. And over the course of really like my last 3 years in high school, I identified more and more with being Jewish and less with being Christian. And by the time I was, say, 18 years old, I really thought of myself as Jewish. I was educating myself. I was reading different books on Judaism that were very influential. When I went to college, I got involved in Hillel. But it was a very long process. It was very difficult. I didn't really have any role models. I had difficulty talking about these issues with anybody. And so it really took me until I was in my mid-20s before I really sat down with a rabbi and said, hey, look, this is my background. I'm kind of troubled by this. And I found out that this is a common story, that people change religions, that you're born Jewish or you're born Christian. You grow up in another faith tradition and you decide that you want to explore, you know, your heritage. And that's, people go in all kinds of directions. I had high school classmates who did the same thing. They went from Catholicism to Mormonism, Christian Science to Catholicism. So there's a lot of room for religious travels in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, that's true. You know, and you do find that a lot of people just sort of bounce around. It's kind of like a buffet.
Right. And the hope is that people will find something that works emotionally for them and spiritually. And I think that's, you know, my view is if you can have something, some kind of faith tradition that connects you to something greater than yourself, however you define that, then that's all to the good.
Right, right. That's a good ideology. Okay, so now you decided to take all of this and write a book.
Right.
Okay, so how much fun was that when you finally sat down to put pen to paper?
Well, the book was a long process. When I did, the way I wrote it was in chapters as essays that I published over the years. The first essay that I ever wrote on this subject actually appeared 9 years ago in the Princeton Alumni Weekly, where I'm a contributor. And it was called Technology Drives the Heart Afield, about how the internet had changed dating and how I had used it. And I developed, you know, a couple of themes there that I thought were promising. The essay went over well, and over the course of years, as something would happen in my life, I would write about it. So I wrote about the Brazil experience. I wrote about going to speed dating. I wrote about other aspects of it. And I started pulling these things together. And people said, you ought to write a book about it. And I thought, yeah, I really should. So I had all this material together. And I found a publisher to query. And I sent the query along. And the publisher liked my outline. And the book resulted from it, and a lot of the material is already written, and the book does read a lot of it like a series of essays, but what I tried to do is put more framing devices in it, a beginning, a conclusion. I wrote new material for it, and I threw in a lot of pictures, because I always think books should have pictures in them to show people what was like, what did things really look like, not just describe them. So it was definitely a long process. I had to think about what do I want to say, what do I want to reveal. There were things I decided not to put into the book, and a lot of things that I wrote that I put in, and there are things that I've written, essays I've written since then that kind of build on what was in the book. But it was a very challenging and gratifying process. I'm glad I finally pushed it along, and I can say, hey, I've written a book, and now it's time to move on to the next project, whatever that will be.
Okay, that was the next question, so what's after the book? But okay, whatever
well,
that
sure,
is.
Sure, the next book, I have a lot of ideas for other books, both fiction and nonfiction, and I've done outlines,
mm-hmm.
And what I'd really like to do is a novel based on themes that are very, very lightly hinted at in the dating book. There were things that happened during my dating adventures, and even this is going back even to the 1980s, that I'd like to treat as a novel. I don't really think I would want to treat it in a nonfiction way, but if I could kind of mix it up, bring in some imaginary material, I'd like to do that. I've got ideas. It's a matter, like everything else, just sitting down and doing it. And
sure.
My feeling in life is if you want to do something, you're going to do it. And if you really don't want to do it, you're not going to do it.
Very true. Or, you know, you can have people say they're going to do something and you know they're not because it's never gotten done. So, you know how that is.
Right. And so I figure if, Charles Dickens could write novels while impoverished, without computers, without electric lights back in the 1840s and 50s, then surely I should be able to do it in 2013.
Without, yeah, that's so true.
So, I mean, again, it's not a matter of the technology or what's going on. It's a matter of you just sit down and do it. And if you really want to do it, then you'll find
it.
You know, for the, you know, I mean, it's something I said a couple of times in dating situations, for there's a will, there's a way. And if the will's not there, you're not going to bother to find the way.
That's true. That's very, very true. You know how it is about the brain. If the mind believes it, the body's going to do it anyway. So.
Right. And what, you know, one thing I do, I mean, kind of as preparation for the book, I'm kind of a great believer in the subconscious or the unconscious working things out. So even though I've been talking about writing my novel for a while, I've been doing a lot of other writing. I write for two different blogs, and I write for my college magazine. So there may be things that I've written that I may not see it playing a role in a book, but, you know, you put enough pieces out there, and then you start connecting the dots. That's what I did with the dating book. There are things I wrote that I just wrote them kind of on their own. I thought, oh, this could go in the book. So as I crank out other things, I feel like the wheels are kind of turning in the background and the pieces will come together. But, you know, the important thing about writing is to write.
Sure.
Get it out there and think about it. And once you have stuff on paper or computer screen, then you can kind of say, oh, you can see the connection and say, oh, yeah, that's what I want to say. That's where I want to go with that.
Right. Now, did you have a preference between writing old-fashioned, old-school, and versus writing on the computer?
Yeah, I actually go back and forth. Sometimes I will actually do things in longhand where I feel like I can't seem to get it done on the computer. And I, you know, I'm on the train in New York a lot, so I'll actually jot down ideas and prose on in a notebook because I'm a big fan of, you know, just write it down. And sometimes you just kind of let your unconscious. You just sit down and start writing. Don't worry what you're saying. Don't worry what it looks like or if it's logical. Just get the stuff down, and then you start thinking about it, and it starts getting pulled together. So while I do a lot on computers, I'm also open to doing things longhand.
Right, right. I don't know. I always found longhand always was more stimulating to the subconscious, I think.
Right, because also you can, like, doodle, you can do little arrows, you can, and it's portable. I can go to the library and write longhand. I'm always a little paranoid about taking a laptop to the library and, like, plugging it in, and, you know, I have to get up for something, like, somebody going to take it. So,
right.
And, you know, and, you know, when you write in a notebook, there's no threat that it's going to, the disk is going to crash. The file
true.
Will become unreadable.
That's very true, and it's also a very popular thing that happens.
I mean, that's why I like to send letters to people longhand, because the email is eventually going to get lost, but if you write somebody a letter, then they can have that letter forever.
You know, that's very true. That's very true. And that's a lost art. Nobody actually likes to write anymore, but it's different when you get an actual something in the mail that somebody took the time. And that's what it really says. Someone took the time to, you know, write.
Yeah, I actually did kind of a flurry of that about a year ago when postal rates were going up, and I had some stamps I wanted to use, and I put a notice on Facebook that if anybody wanted a genuine handwritten letter from me, let me know and I'd write to them. And a couple of my friends did, and I wrote each one an individual letter. I bought nice stationery and nice stamps, nothing generic, and each one got a letter, and maybe one or two people wrote me back, and it was really an exercise in old-school communication because I save letters. I have handwritten letters that my mother wrote me 30 or 40 years ago. And
mm-hmm.
I, you know, those will always be with me. And I've got letters that I wrote to her that she saved. So I come from a family where letter writing was prized, and I would really like to maintain that. My son is a college freshman now, and I think I'm going to start writing him weekly letters just like my mother wrote to me.
Oh, that's always nice, yeah.
He may be the only kid on campus getting handwritten letters.
No, well, and so, you know, his friends see it, and they'll be like, dude, your dad writes you letters?
Yeah.
Our dad doesn't write us. You'll suddenly look up, and your son will be going, Dad, my friends would like to know if you could write them a letter.
Yeah, this way you can see what my handwriting looks like.
There you go. I'll be like, yes, your dad writes like a doctor. There you go.
Unfortunately, that's true. I'm always looking for like a pen that seems, you know, the problem is the pen, not my handwriting.
Oh, is that it? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's your story. You're going to stick to it, right?
Right.
I can actually say that's true, though. There are certain pens, you just have beautiful handwriting, and then there's those other pens. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I like flare pens, some ballpoint pens, a lot of pens that I seem to get flipped from the office or other places are just, you know, not dark enough, not inky enough. I mean, just something about it, it looks sloppy, but.
Yeah, I'm a medium point person myself. My friends are all into those. What is it, that 0.1 millimeter, that really fine, ridiculous tip looking
thing?
And I'm like, no.
No, that wouldn't work for me. I need something a little bolder looking.
Yeah, exactly. I have to have the 7 so I can have a nice medium even flow. So I agree with you. It is partially about the pen.
You sound like a good letter writer yourself.
You know, I don't have anybody to write letters to. I have one friend that actually we still write handwritten letters, so I understand the writing thing.
Okay.
Everybody else suddenly decided to be techie, and it's like, really? My personal favorite is you send them an email and they don't get the email.
You can always write to me.
Okay, I can always write to you. Yeah, you can write back. There you go.
Keep the Postal Service in business.
Well, for a little while longer at least.
Yeah.
Poor guys. Yeah. You know, I have to say, this past Christmas was the one Christmas I ever went to the Postal Services out here, and they were almost empty, which is almost shocking.
Yeah, the town where I'm in, Westport, Connecticut, one post office completely closed. Another, the main post office, which is one of these beautiful 1930s post offices, relocated to a shopping plaza with about 1/10 of space. You know, I had my mail held during the hurricane that hit the East Coast, and I couldn't even get it here in my town. I had to go to the next town over where they had a mail facility where the mail was held. So I went to the Westport Post Office and said, oh, you got to go to Norwalk and get it. I said, oh, okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, ours were actually, matter of fact, the one that's up the street from my house here in Sacramento closed at noon. So if you needed to do anything, then you had, and you'll appreciate the fact that our main post office is in a completely different county, so it's over in West Sacramento, which is a different county, and they don't operate on weekends, holidays, exactly, like,
yeah.
Wow. So, okay, there you have it. We do have one big post office that operates, but again, the mail is still going to sit there because the main post office where everything gets distributed from is closed.
Yeah.
So you still end up with your mail waiting and sitting, and it's like, okay, not cool. So how can people find your book?
Well, the book is available through Amazon. If you just go to Amazon and look for A Kosher Dating Odyssey by Van Wallach, it's going to be there. I believe it's available in hard copy and also, I believe, a Kindle edition. I think Barnes & Noble also has it. And there's actually a Jewish bookstore here in New York that may start carrying it at retail, so I'm very excited about that. So I can actually have now available at retail. But online is the way to go. And you can also find information about the book at the blog I keep for it, which is wallach.coffeetownpress.com. It's a publisher in Seattle. And, you know, it's up there on Amazon like all the other books in the world. And, you know, one thing about technology, it definitely evens the playing field.
True.
You know, I figured I was happy to get it published. And I was very thankful to Coffee Town Press. And, you know, it's out there, and, you know, you can find it as easily as you can find 50 Shades of Grey.
That's true.
Even though I'm about 49 million and 0.99 copies sold behind her, but, you know, you never know.
Well, you know, if you decide to write a spiced-up Jewish version of Shades of Grey, there you go.
That's been something I've kicked around.
Uh-huh,
the novel might have some elements of that. You never know.
That was there. Well, there you are then. Yep. See, then we'll be going, I remember him. He wrote that other crazy book about dating. So this is what you were doing. And
yeah, this is what I didn't put in the dating book.
Yeah, this is what wasn't in the dating book. Yeah. See, now you're definitely not going to be able to do that as a non-fiction. It'll have to be fiction. Otherwise,
right.
People are going to be going, So any other parting tips for our fans while I still have you on the phone?
Sure. I would say be true to yourself. Be brave. If you want to find the love of your life, get out there and look for it. If you want to write a book, get out there and do it. And these ideas apply no matter what age you are. I grew up with people, went to college with people that have been incredible successes in life very early on. I got my first book published when I was 54. What I say is there's no statute of limitations. You're never too old to find love, to write a book, to start a radio show, to do anything you want. The only limitations that really exist are limitations you put on yourself.
Absolutely. I can agree with that. That's so true. Well, Van, it has truly been a pleasure. I think we were going to talk about some of our favorite movies before. You had a couple of movies that you liked.
Yep.
Okay. What were your two favorite movies?
The two favorite movies that I mentioned in the book, one was an Israeli movie called Turn Left at the at the End of the World, which set in 1968, which was probably, the most erotic Jewish movie I've ever seen in terms of the characters, the scenarios, what they showed, everything that happened. It's one of those very few movies I've seen actually more than once. You can get it through Netflix. It's great. One of the other movies that I thought was really good that I mentioned in the book was called Nowhere in Africa, which was kind of a very different kind of Holocaust movie about a German Jewish family that left Germany in time and settled in Kenya, and which I didn't really know anything about. I was always thought about people escaping to South America or the U.S. or other places, but this was a very different kind of story where this family set up in, I think, near Nairobi, and their adventures and kind of the stresses on a couple, and they had a daughter, and she matured in Kenya and became very acclimated to the cultures there and how they maintained their Jewish identity, how they integrated with the community there, has some very compelling parts to it, and that's a movie I liked a lot. I think it was nominated for a Best Foreign Film Oscar a couple of years ago. And there are like loads of, I did the chapter in the book, The Sexiest Jewish Movies. Those are two that I came up with. And, I also had, my favorite stars, anything by Amy Irving, I love. Lainey Kazan, who, even though she's about 70 years old now, has been in all kinds of movies, very kind of sexy the way she comes across, very life-affirming, definitely a very naughty and nice Jewish girl. Would have liked to have known her back in her singing days, back in the 60s and 70s, but alas, I was a little too young at the time.
Well, okay. Well, that's true. Now, my favorite naughty and nice definition of a Jewish girl would be Lauren Bacall.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, definitely got that covered.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just actually thinking about Lauren Bacall yesterday, of all things. On New Year's Eve, I saw the movie This Is 40, which I found very funny in places. In some ways, it's a Jewish movie. Very funny, but, just astoundingly vulgar. And some of its setups and situations. And I was thinking to myself, I wonder if Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall would have ever made a movie like this, if they could have. And I couldn't see them doing it.
I don't know. Lauren's kind of spicy in her latter years. I could see her, she's got that she's always had that power, you know. I could see her throwing something, maybe in the latter year, something kind of fun, and maybe do it as a series of flashbacks, so to speak. But I could see them sitting there, like, reminiscing. Anyway.
I could see that. I couldn't see Lauren Bacall, though, doing, you know, showing, doing a mammogram scene. I just that's just not part of it. So, yeah, I mean, there's a difference between being, like, erotic and saucy and just being, like, too out there that it destroys their kind of intimacy and mystery.
Right. That's true. Well, let me give you a film to go check out, which is Amy and Jaguar, which you actually like because I believe one of the stars from that is actually in the movie from Africa.
I had actually seen Amy and Jaguar. And
I like that movie.
Yeah, I mean, it was very powerful, and that, all the more so because it was a true story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very sad story, the way it played out, and it was... Yeah, I mean, that's certainly one that I would recommend to people also.
Yeah, very poignant story. Well, Van, I appreciate you taking the time after the great New Year celebration to come on the show.
Okay, well, I appreciate it.
Happy to be on here. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
And we look forward to having you back.
Okay, I will keep you posted on my activities.
Okay, thanks a lot.
And
send me an email with your address, and I'll send you a letter.
Okay, and I'll do the same.
All right, thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on this edition of Dr. Andy Radio, your solutionpreneurial resource for 60 minutes or less to success. To get further information about this radio station or the shows it provides, please visit us at www.drande-radio.com.